The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. At 7 minutes after 7 on KMED, the Bill Myers Show. Appreciate you being here. Jeff Sinselma. Hey, Jeff. How you doing this morning? Welcome.
Hey, Bill. That person gave you a list of cities with the ballparks and how well they're doing. Read that list off again.
Okay. Kaiser, Oregon is one of them that was mentioned here. Salem, Kaiser.
Portland.
So, Portland, Vancouver, B.C., Boise, Yakima, and you know, a bunch of other ones that that this person says I should be getting in touch with. And, you know, I think I will. I will do whatever. This person's kind of anonymous. I'm not exactly sure what the name is. I asked, what's your real name, rather than the...
Well, they're still listening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But what were you thinking?
Well, what thing do those major metropolitan areas all have in common? They're major metropolitan areas. Right? What's the population?
Okay. So this is it. This was kind of going back to my statement that the problem with Southern Oregon is that, you know, like Medford is an example, too large to be cute and quaint, but too small for the financial gravitas. Is that kind of what you're thinking? That sort of thing?
Well, I mean, the population of Salem is 178,425,
mm-hmm.
178,000, right?
Right.
And so Kaiser is right next to Salem, which is very close to Portland, which has how many million people, right?
Yes.
Boise, Idaho, what's the population there? And so what population do you have in Josephine County, Jackson County, and Siskiyou County?
Well, if you combine Jackson, Josephine County, our Southern Oregon area, what, about 250,000, something like that?
Right. So, I mean, you've got... First off, you've got the tax base. Second off, you've got the population to actually come and watch the games. Because unless people spend money coming to the games, you're not going to make any money. So if you took $90 million and you could give 900 small businesses $100,000.
Not that you would necessarily want to give 900 businesses $100,000, but if you're looking to, that could
be startup capital for how many businesses in Medford.
Interesting point, Jeff. Thanks for making that. 770-5633. Let me go to Michael Shaw. Hello, Michael. How are you doing this morning? Welcome.
I'm good. I'm really good. It's going to take me a moment to flesh this out about the stadium. So,
yes.
Being born in Minnesota and a diehard Vikings fan, a number of years ago, the Vikings needed to build a new stadium because their bubble stadium imploded in the middle of winter from snow sitting on top of this inflated roof.
Yeah.
So the ownership of the Vikings wanted to build their own stadium without any state funding, outside of Minneapolis, on a piece of property that they purchased. They would build a stadium, they would put up hotels, they were going to have a shopping center, all that they funded themselves. Just so happens the Vikings owners made their money in the construction business, so they know what they're talking about.
Sure.
But they were politically pressured to keep the stadium in downtown Minneapolis. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the stadium costs $1.2 billion, and the Vikings put in $450 million of that as their part of the stadium. They basically, it was prepaid rent, okay?
That's also what the Eugene Emeralds were trying to do in Eugene, but the voters turned them down.
Right. But the Vikings paid off their portion of it 20 years early because they could.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not heard of anybody asking the Emeralds, what portion of the cost of building this stadium are you going to absorb in terms of your rent to use a publicly owned stadium? No one has said, well, out of the $90 million, $30 million is going to be paid by the team.
Well, the way I was looking at the deal as it's been reported on so far, okay, it would appear that for every – okay, for if you take $8 – we'll just look at $8 If it cost $8 to build the stadium, it would be $7 paid for by the taxpayer and $1 paid for by the Eugene Emeralds. That's the way the deal would look like.
Yeah, see, that just doesn't cut it. If they're going to be the major tenant and they're going to keep all the ticket sales from their events and they're going to keep all the concession money from their events, then their portion of that $90 million needs to be higher than that 1/8.
Okay. All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks for that, Michael. 770-5633. We also have Mr. Outdoors on here a little bit, too. Okay.
One of each K4 today.
Mr. Outdoors is standing by. We'll get with him in just a moment or two here. Monica, you wanted to weigh in on our little conversation we were having on stadium socialism, you know, sports stadium socialism. I'm not a big fan of this, but that's just kind of baked into my DNA. What are you thinking about this deal? Good morning.
Well, I really think, I don't live in Medford, but I think it's awful because my husband and I used to go to the A's at Miles Field all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is when the games are on TV for the big guys, people aren't going to them. When they're playing the A's here, it's just really crazy. It's just really crazy. I just can't believe somebody would pay that much amount of money for something that's not going to benefit our area.
Well, it might benefit the area in some ways. I'm not saying that there couldn't be some economic benefit, but my issue tends to be these are long-term. Even their own people are saying 23 years before revenue will outpace the expenses. That's a long time to wait for a turnaround. You know what I'm getting at?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I would just be very careful, very careful. And I don't know if our Medford City Council is careful or not. I guess we'll be finding out. Let me go to Chuck. Chuck, you wanted to weigh in on that, too. Go ahead. Morning.
Yeah, there's a fella that's involved with the baseball in the area. Could I tell you his name?
It might be
a nice one to have on for a talk show segment.
Now, who would that be?
David May.
Okay.
Do you know David?
No, is he the guy that runs Rogues?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I've talked with him before. It's been a while, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's got some good insight. And the other thing, how is the Bear Creek, Harry and David Field, how are they doing? Is it all 23 years until they make money or what?
I can't answer that. I can.
Oh, okay.
All right, but thank you. I know. Mr. Outdoors, we will get to Mr. Outdoors in about 2 minutes, okay? But I'll grab one more call on this one. Something tells me we're going to be talking about this a lot over the coming weeks. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, it's David.
Yeah, David.
Well, it's a really stark contrast, you know, tourism and sports over, like, actual wealth generation, like, you know, selling a tree or something. But, you know, the thing is, having people who already live here or live very close by coming and spending their money on tickets and then the tangential money of, like, going to a restaurant afterwards, like, that's not a really, you know, the thing about that is the reason you build the stadiums all over the place is that you're trying to attract, I mean, there's some amount of traveling spectators, but you're trying to get money from the people within a certain radius of the facility. So it's just, like, you can just open a big casino and have people that already live here go spend money, and then you could say, you know, by that same logic, you could say, oh, well, that's generating economic activity, but that's really so different from any kind of wealth generation, you know, that we used to have with industry.
All right. Point well taken on that one. David, thanks so much. And hold the calls here for a little bit because I want to get Mr. Outdoor's take on that because he's worked with the Medford Rogues a lot. And I bet he has an opinion on that, along with the weather and everything else. Got that all coming up.
2x4, 2x8,
3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
And waking up with the Outdoor Report every Friday. We love to talk to Greg Roberts over at RogueWeather.com, sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. Hey, Greg, bet your ears are burning a little bit. I mean, you've done a lot of work with Medford Rogues, right? Welcome back.
Well, and before that, with the Medford A/Southern Oregon Timberjacks. So, yeah, no, actually quite a lot about this.
Yeah, I bet. What are you thinking overall about, you know, at least your deal as far as what the level of support might be for this? You know, $90 million for a ball thing, we got to proceed carefully on something like this, in my view.
It's going to have to be more money because you cannot do it with an open-air stadium. In August and September, with our wildfire smoke impact, and I did make this point with Major League Baseball, when the A's were here, we didn't have the wildfire smoke impacts that we have now. I also pointed out the fact that Medford High Schools, north and south for sure anyway.
Uh-huh.
Last September was the first time they were able to play their games at home in Spiegelberg Stadium and not have them move because of smoke impact in September since 2017.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah.
They had not considered that. I sent an email to the representative from Major League Baseball involved in this, and I pointed that out to him. That's going to be a deal killer, because the cost to build the stadium we would need to have to ensure that the M's would be able to complete a season successfully, it has to be domed and climate control. So throw $90 million out the window.
So I wonder what a domed and climate-controlled one would be the equivalent. What, double it? Double it, 300,000 or 300 million? I don't know. What do you think?
It's definitely not 90 million. I would guarantee you it at least doubles or triples the cost. Now, here's the thing. What we do know about, well, Medford, Jackson County by extension, will not invest the money. Actually, I'll put it a different way. There will not be taxpayer approval for the money for the things that are critical needs, like a jail. But, oh, my gosh, shiny bauble like this?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. And I understand what goes on here because a lot of people like sports. God bless them. Now, I'm not one of the sports guys. I'm not a big sports guy. You know that, but I've been quite open about that. I'm kind of like Lars in that respect. You know, it's just not my thing. God bless you. People need their entertainment. My concern, and I'm not a big fan of the public-private partnership just as a rule, because usually if something is that pencilable and is able to generate that much wealth, you normally don't have trouble raising the money for it yourself. But the fact that they have to go to the public to do it always gives me pause. We socialize the costs and we privatize profits in many ways, I think. That's what I'm concerned about.
The business model for affiliated minor league baseball and also, let's be fair, summer collegiate baseball, cost of building stadiums, that is not in the business model. That's not what they do.
So the business model is always you get the community to build it for them, in other words.
Or you move into an existing facility.
Mm-hmm.
So the existing facility, Harry and David Field in Medford, the way the A's and the Northwest League, by the way, the same league that the M's are in, the way the A's and the Northwest League left Medford, the good old boys, as you refer to them, were so PO'd they literally passed a city ordinance making it against the law for professional baseball to be played. Well, I had been told it was within the city of Medford. Turns out it was using any current city of Medford facility, meaning they didn't want to see what happened with the A's leaving Miles Field happen ever again. And so they passed that. So it would be against the law for the M's to play in Harry and David Field. So they have to build a brand new facility.
Okay. So there is no then, but of course they could probably change that law, assuming that ordinance exists. I've not heard of that one.
There is no assuming it exists. It does exist.
Okay.
But it only pertains to existing facilities.
All right. But a new facility, do what you want with it, right?
Right. Yeah. And then when Harry and David Field replaced Miles Field, they went so far as to not include critical need things at Harry and David Field, like locker rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get the Oregon State Beavers coming here in the fall anymore, even though the average crowd when they did was 3,000 people. We don't get the Oregon State Beavers coming here in the fall anymore because we don't have locker room facilities at Harry and David Field. We don't have showers, for example.
That's a big deal.
So,
you know, that's a big deal.
Keep pro baseball out of here.
All right.
They literally left Harry and David Field without facilities it would need, even for high school baseball.
Would it be then, let me just ask now, I know here it is, you've been announcer for the Rogues, and you will, are you going to do it this year, by the way? Just curious.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay.
Basically, the way my deal with the Rogues works, and Dave will back this up, now that I've got it, it's pretty much my gig for as long as I want it.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Glad to hear that. So the point being, though, is that Miles Field could be remodeled to fit these Major League Baseball standards or not, in your opinion? You work there, so.
Miles Field is now South Medford Walmart, so I'm assuming about Harry and
David. I'm sorry, Harry and David Field. I'm sorry. Pardon me.
The first step in that process, though, would be to change the law that exists on the book that prevents it. Mm-hmm. Then you'd have to do the build-out of locker rooms. Then you would have to increase seating, I guarantee you, and then parking becomes a real issue. We have issues with parking when the Rogues are getting more than 1,200 people in the stadium, which we do.
Okay. So there is an audience for this. No problem with getting an audience for it, but is there an audience that pencils enough to pay off a $90 million stadium? I guess that is the question.
And at the ticket prices that are going to get charged, too.
Because what are the ticket prices right now for a Rogues game? And I will talk with Dave, you know, about this. I'll get him on.
If you want to buy it on the season ticket plan, which was available, you're probably, even for the really good seats, if I remember right, it breaks down to about $5, $6 per game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you walk up and you buy it, you know, single game, then you're paying $15 for the really good seats. But on Sundays, you can see the Rogues play for free. Bring the whole family. General admission, there's no charge on Sundays. That would never happen with the M's. I guarantee it.
Interesting. But, of course, Medford Rogues, that's not a professional league, though, right?
No, right. We're summer collegiate baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another reason that the Rogues were happy to get out of the West Coast League, because when they were in the West Coast League, where the season ran into August, they were continuously having games canceled or had to be moved, playing as the home team in the city of the team they were supposed to play here in Medford, because the smoke conditions wouldn't allow them to play.
That's very interesting. You know, given our forest policy and our fire policy and our various other things, doing a stadium without it being capped and covered and air-conditioned, you just think that's a no-go. It just doesn't work.
It's a no-go.
Ah, okay. All right.
Because I told Major League Baseball this. I said, we didn't have this issue when the A's played here. Now we do, and I don't know when or if we will ever see that risk of wildfire smoke canceling games. If you do an open-air stadium, I don't think any of us alive right now will see that change.
So that will doom.
That guy's been cast.
That would doom it. Okay. All right. I appreciate your insight, given that you work those games. You're there for them. So you understand it. Okay. Greg, could you stand by for another segment here? Then let's talk about the rest of the outdoors and what we're looking at in the next few days. Okay?
Yeah, definitely. Because we haven't even gotten to the major topic of the week yet that I can now that I've had it explained to me by people with knowledge, because whether you think so or not, I don't know it all. I have found out what the situation is with the quote-unquote dire wolves.
All right. Will do. We're going to be delving into the reviving of extinct species. Next.
One of each. K4 VIN 016551 MSRP 24145. Telluride VIN 624073 MSRP 44735 5999. Due 10K miles per year. Zero security deposit. All incentives and discounts to dealer plus 10.
Getting on the baseball wolf and party train. What can I say this morning? Hey, Greg, we'll leave the wolf for last, okay? But are we looking at? It looks like it's going to be really nice next few days or so. Why don't you break that down for us, please?
Yeah, when the groundhog said, oh, we're going to have 6 more weeks of winter, I said, well, yeah, maybe back there. Out in this part of the world, we'd probably get to the end of April, beginning of May, before we would see what everybody likes to consider spring around here. And to a degree, that is still true, but we are definitely transitioning to that. There's no two ways around it. We had a weak system go through to the north of us that, it turned out even weaker than what the models were suggesting that it would. We're going to have some cloudy skies here today to begin with, and then things will clear out. I see that Portland National Weather Service, for their forecast zone, which includes west of the Cascades, Lane County, Douglas County, Lyon North, Medford has through Douglas County, they've already got a frost advisory out for tonight for their area. I would suspect we may see frost advisory down here. I just don't know if Medford National Weather Service has declared the start of growing season yet. But now that we are where we are, we've had some warm days. There's been a lot of things budding out. I will tell you that definitely tonight into tomorrow morning, people need to protect their sensitive vegetation.
Okay.
Because we definitely will be down low enough to get frost going in outlying areas. Not totally impossible that some of the colder spots may even make it below freezing. So, you know, yeah, we kind of go through this. Yeah, we get taste of spring, and then here comes a taste of winter. So we're having that taste of winter right now. But by the time we hit Monday here in Medford, we're looking to be 80 degrees.
Okay, very good. Hey, Greg, that's great. And let's then talk about the dire wolf. I had a listener call up about that, reviving that. Of course, I find it interesting that we're trying to revive genetically extinct predators. I'd kind of hoping that they would revive like the old pig that used to taste a lot better than the new pig. Seriously.
Well,
you know?
You know, what was funny, I knew that this company who claimed to have brought the dire wolf back, I knew that their crown project they were working on was the woolly mammoth. I didn't even know they were doing this dire wolf thing until they announced it. And they announced it, when they announced it, the pups, the three pups that they were saying were dire wolf pups, were, I believe, 4 to 5 months old already.
Oh.
So that means this project has been going on, obviously, quite some time, because you're not going to do this overnight. But the way it was released to the public, what they were saying, they kind of made it sound like they'd done a Jurassic Park thing here and brought the dire wolf back in the same way the dinosaurs were brought back with Jurassic Park. And, you know, I don't know about that stuff. I mean, I don't know everything, even though the detractors listening to me right now sure say that I do.
They're laughing. They're laughing. You know that, yeah. Greg. I'm laughing with you. But anyway.
So then people who absolutely do know the subject, know what's going on, understood what they did. Now, here we are at the end of the week, and those people who actually know and understand the bioengineering here are saying this. They're not dire wolves. They're gray wolves who have some genetic markers of dire wolves in them. They're not dire wolves. And once I heard that explained, I was like, okay, I get this.
Why were they called dire wolves? Were they just dire predators? I mean, what?
I kind of think it was, you know, kind of a term. Who knows what they were called when they were actually present on the earth? I mean, that's okay. Kind of a good question. Now I'm hearing they were a complete different canid altogether from our current modern wolves or coyotes or fox, very much like we're seeing develop back east right now with these hybrids between coyotes and eastern timber wolves that are now breeding. The hybrids are breeding together and literally creating a new canine. So that possibility of that kind of thing is absolutely true, and we're seeing it playing out in real time with Mother Nature, evolution of something new that isn't bioengineered at all.
All right, very good. We'll take that to the bank here. Like I was mentioning, though, I do hope that they start bringing back more heritage breeds of some animals, though, because when I was over in France, the reason I brought that up a little while ago, Mr. Outdoors, is that pork actually tastes so much better in France, because a lot of times they're using heritage breeds of pork that actually have more fat in them rather than this whole pork, the other white meat kind of BS that they've been doing, you know, for a long time in the United States. I thought it was quite interesting.
And then in the United States, it just automatically, fat just became bad because, well, as it's turning out, I mean, watch the reintroduction of beef tallow now.
Right.
Not necessarily true. I mean, there's so many things that get called, quote-unquote, settled science that you then find out they're not.
Yeah, fat is bad, but lots of refined carbohydrates and sugar replacing meat, that's good. Right.
There's only four things out there that are 100% settled science. Sun rises and sets in the east. Grass is green. The sky is blue. And gravity is real. Those are it.
And Mr. Outdoors, and also the other settled science, Mr. Outdoors will reappear, make another appearance next Friday. How about that? Okay?
Yeah. Now, so why do I think this is going on? And is that something that the Biden administration was putting money into? Here's the deal. Pay close attention to even what the Trump administration, and I listened to Pete Hegseth the other day really get into this. They're talking about all the ways China is ahead of us, and that includes bioengineering. And I really do think that this company that created, quote unquote, the dire wolf and is working on the woolly mammoth, that's not all they're working on. That's the cover for what they're actually doing that the government is investing in, and it's bioengineering as a whole and probably on a level most of us couldn't even comprehend. But clearly this has been going on decades now.
All right. Very good. Mr. Outdoors, thank you so much. We'll catch you next Friday, all right? You have a great weekend, and enjoy the stuff, and we'll certainly keep up with you on RogueWeather.com. All right? Thank you. Greg Roberts, RogueWeather.com, 738. We're going to check the rest of the news here in just a moment. Kevin Starrett updating us on where the gun bills, where we find the gun bills. And he was laughing the other day, saying that they've solved the homelessness situation because Portland is now going to start homelessness housing projects. What could go wrong? Because Portland is so good. And, well, Oregon in general, government's very good at homeless projects, right? More of that coming up.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what...
Patrick, and I'm on KMED.
Just wanted to do a quick little postscript on that talk about the old pigs. The old pigs that actually used to taste a lot better rather than the lean pork that they've put us up on now. There's now a new food pyramid they're working on. I'll have to talk more about this later. I have a copy of it here. And the top base of what we're supposed to be eating, according to this new food pyramid, assuming that this moves forward, is cheeses, plain yogurt, beef, poultry, eggs, pork, fish and shellfish, olive oil, butter, cream, lard, and tallow. That's the bottom of the pyramid, right? You know, the big base of diet. In other words, the Atkins diet. Everything old is new again. Of course, I remember they were telling everybody that you know, Atkins was crazy back in the day. Okay, we'll set that aside at the moment. Kevin Starrett is here. I don't know if he's been genetically engineered or re-engineered yet by the people bringing back the dire wolf or not. How you doing, Kevin, over at Oregon Firearms Federation? Good morning.
I am totally genetically engineered. There's no question.
Glad to know it. Glad to know it. Hey, why don't you touch on... before we get into the gun situation, you sent me some stories about how Portland is now throwing in the towel and is now going to be building housing projects for the homeless.
It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious because, you know, I'm from New York. I have been in the projects in New York, government housing. You know what government housing is. So basically what they're going to do is, I guarantee you, after they bulldozed Alberta, the Alberta neighborhood, where all, you know, the black neighborhoods, they all kind of got screwed. People lost their homes so they could build something to, you know, highway or something. Now they're going to do the same thing. They'll find what remains of a black neighborhood. They'll bulldoze it to put up crappy apartments for white fentanyl addicts who then will steal all the copper plumbing to pay for their drugs. It is, you know, they've admitted to being $93 million in the hole. And they said they're going to build this stuff. This one lesbian pastor got up and said, because they're talking about doing a study, right?
Yeah.
Do a study on public housing.
And of course, a study is where all good or bad ideas go to die, ultimately. But I don't know.
Well, unfortunately, the bad ideas don't die. It's the problem.
And they get reelected is what happens in our state, but I digress.
She got up to testify and said, this is a great idea. You know, she's got, her church has some property they want to build housing on. She goes, but I don't want to do a study. Let's just do it. Let's just get it built. So, you know, Portland, which is famous for efficient and successful government projects, is now going to build housing for fentanyl addicts. You know, for people who really don't want to live in housing if there are any rules, which, of course, there won't be. And so the government, and of course, it will have to be built with union labor. So it'll cost 1,000% more than it should. And then people who aren't paying rent, who have no particular stake in where they're living, will destroy the place. It'll fall apart. And the funny thing is, one of the city councilors, because now I guess there's 12 of them, said, well, you know, okay, we're out of money. Who's going to pay for this? Well, the taxpayers are going to pay for it, of course, because sure. this should go on the government dime. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. You just said the taxpayers are paying for it. And I was, okay, once the taxpayers have their money extorted from it, it is the government's money. It's theirs. They own it. They can do whatever they want with it. And in this case, what they're going to do is build a bunch of crappy housing that they're going to put drug addicts in. And it's going to be a colossal, massive failure. But they really want to do it. You see, the thing is that there's people who live in nice neighborhoods. They have an obligation to share the load.
Well, yeah, you need dirtbag equity, I think, is the program, what that's called. In fact, there aren't enough dirtbags in your neighborhood, so you have to have dirtbag equity. That's like a diversity push, right?
Well, you know, and what really is, this stuff is funny because we know where it's going. The really funny part about this story is that Portland has had a guy, an employee, who's been studying, you know, social housing in uh-huh. Austria for the last 2 years. Oh, a 2-year vacation that taxpayer expense. You know, I lived in Austria. It's nice. He's spent the last 2 years there. It's absolutely hysterical. But, you know, obviously, as funny as this is, this crap leaches down to the rest of the state, of course, because the rest of the state always winds up following the stupid crap that Portland does. It is funny to watch all this dissolve, but there are good people who live in that city and in Oregon who ultimately are being completely destroyed by these policies. And, you know, if you're unfortunate enough to be stuck in Portland or Multnomah County, and, you know, they're going to build projects next to the home you invested in, it really isn't funny. It's tragic. And there is no reason to believe that this stuff is even going to slow down. Once, I mean, Oregon has a, you know, their way of doing things is to find policies that have failed elsewhere and then make sure they implement them. And it is dissolving at absolute astonishing rate.
You see a lot of this in the state legislature, too. I wanted to shift it over to the firearms issue because, of course, you know, Oregon Firearms Federation, you're defending this. And some folks will write me, Kevin, and they kind of talk, how do I put it? It's almost like that you're too much of a nervous Nelly about it, that no, they're not going to close the gun stores. This is not going to happen. And, you know, and all we have to do is get our sheriff to stand up. That's another common thing, you know, that I will hear about this. And I will try to mention to people when I look at these bills being passed by the legislature or moving through it, is that, yeah, you can have your sheriff protecting a Second Amendment right, but he can't force a business to do the background check and complete it. You know, with things, you know, you can't do this. Is that kind of what people are missing on this, you know, on the danger of the bills being passed right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. They're not going to do this to me. The Second Amendment's my pistol license,
right.
That hand, all that kind of stuff. Okay, that's fine. If you are currently a gun owner and you have magazines for your guns, they're in your possession. Mm-hmm. You can just declare war on the state. But the problem is the way these bills have been drafted. And I will tell you, listening to the chairs of the committees, Krupp and Prusansky, they have no compunction about outright lying about what the elements of these bills actually are. Like,
could you give me an example of Senate Bill 243 as an example? They, you know, what it really does, what they claim it does, maybe. All right.
Well, I mean, Prusansky made a comment during that bill. You see, currently, if you're trying to purchase a gun and you have to undergo a background check, you're subjected to the whims of the Oregon State Police, who
right.
can choose to approve it or delay it endlessly. And now, in addition to the permits that will be required and the multiple background checks, to get a permit which doesn't allow you to buy a gun, it just allows you to ask to buy a gun, then you go and you get another background check, which the state police can either act on or not act on. And they've added a 3-day waiting period to this, something we got rid of years ago in a deal with the Democrats, which, of course, is...
Yeah, shows you why you don't want to make deals with the Democrats. Doesn't matter.
Never make a deal with a Democrat. But Prusansky was, responding to questions from Senator McClain, was saying, no, there's not going to be any delays at all. You know, your guns are going to be transferred right away after the 72-hour waiting period. When in fact, what they've actually added to this is they've eliminated the one safeguard there is when the state police don't do their job. So currently, because Measure 114 is not in effect because it's been enjoined, The law still says that if the state police refuse to do their job and do not complete a background check, after 3 business days, legally, you're entitled to take possession of that gun. Well, they removed that. That was removed in 114, but of course, 114 hasn't taken effect yet. But the bills that they're pushing now take away that safeguard, which of course is a loophole, right? Everything that protects your rights is a loophole.
Rather than just being part of the law to protect people. So the protections are gone, which means that you can't get a background check completed after a certain time. It doesn't matter. Is that ultimately what this means?
Yeah, you will wait forever. Another perfect example of the hilarious, but not, I guess, hilarious watching it from, you know, from afar is Krupp in the House committee when confronted actually by a Democrat House rep who said, yeah, the people voted for this, but they didn't vote for a 250% increase in the fees. He said that the 250% increase in fees was a minor technical fix.
Okay, I mean, more than doubling the fees is a minor technical fix? Really?
Yeah, because you see the people who the communists who wrote 114 meant it to be 250% higher. They just made a little mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the idea that this isn't going to happen, you know, let's face it, who wants to believe this stuff? You know, years ago when I was saying, "Oh, they're going to end gun sales at gun shows. Oh, that's never going to happen. It can't happen here." Well, of course that happened. They're going to end private transfers. Oh, that can't happen. Well, they've done that. They're going to expand the places where you can't lawfully have a self-defense firearm in spite of having a license. Oh, that can't happen. Well, that's happened. You know, everything we've said, and, you know, obviously I'm the voice of gloom all the time, but it's all coming true. And, you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine recently who was very friendly with a gun owner, and he has taken her out shooting, and she had a conversation with him recently that these were coming, and he was like, "Nah, never going to happen, right? Or I already have plenty of guns. I'm not worried." But the reality is once the gun stores are crippled, yes, you may own what you own, but you're still subject to being arrested for what you own, meaning magazines, and you still can't purchase anything new because the gun stores, if they still exist, won't have the ability to do the transfers without these multiple layers of bureaucracy, which you can only satisfy if you have a lot of money and access to the kind of classes that they're demanding you take.
And I would also add that one of the issues here is that the gun stores get crippled by the Measure 114s and the Senate Bill 234s. And then you say, okay, well, I'll just buy stuff online. Well, then the out-of-state gun places will not ship to Oregon. I remember this happened last time.
Well,
right?
But it wouldn't matter whether they shipped or not, because they still have to ship to the dealer, and the dealers won't exist anymore. Because if you look at the provisions of, I guess this, what am I losing my track of? There's so many gun bills now. 376.
376,
imposes these regulations on gun stores. And if you look at them, and I don't know if people really even have the stomach to look at it, but the physical barriers that they'll put in place are insane. On top of that, there will be these unannounced, you know, inspections by the state police. All their employees have to take certain classes. They've got to pay these usurious fees. And of course, all of that stuff, you know, 24-hour-a-day video that you have saved for 5 years, all of this would also apply to the home-based FFLs, who of course will have to give up their FFLs,
mm-hmm.
and gun shows. You know, gun shows move around. You can't impose steel gates coming down over your counter at a gun show. And so while people like Krupp, the House Judiciary Chair, you know, says, look, these are just safety measures. The gun dealers will go along with this. This is what good people do. Mm. Any fool can look at the measures and see what the goal here is. And the goal here is to end firearms ownership, which the people who've asked for this stuff in the past, it made no secret of. I mean, you know, they'll say, oh, we just want gun safety. But privately, and when all of this stuff comes out, it's like the goal is to end firearms ownership because these people are extremely neurotic. I mean, you look at someone like Przanski. Przanski has kind of a weird history. You know, his sister was murdered by the drug dealer she was sleeping with, and he's never gotten over that. And he's kind of like feels like neutered and all that. So what does he want to do? He wants to take it out on the people who actually would do something while protecting criminals. I mean, it's pathetic. It's sick. It's neurotic. But Oregon has a history of electing neurotics and re-electing neurotics. And this is really a dangerous road we're going down.
The other thing I was going to ask you about is, you know, what about where are the Republicans in all of this? Because, you know, is it still one of these things where, well, I'm more concerned about my career as a senator or as a state house rep, because as long as they're providing quorum and all of this stuff passes through the legislature like, well, the proverbial excrement through a goose, so to speak, and they're there, aren't they, in essence, tacitly agreeing?
If they're on the floor for the votes, they have helped pass them. But where they are is it's painful to watch. Now, granted, I think there are a lot of people who think that my approach is extreme. I'm rude. I'm in people's faces. Mm-hmm. It's not everybody's way to do things. But when I watch these people in committee, and, you know, Republicans will ask questions in committee, but they're obsequious and they're pandering. And if every question is always phrased with, well, I know that you people are trying to do the right thing, but what about this and what about that? And in many cases, they're just either incredibly ignorant or just pretending to be. You know, there were questions asked when one of these bills is moving through, several of these bills moving through the House Judiciary Committee. And on that committee sits Republican Rick Lewis, who's a former police guy, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the comments he made is, well, you know, if you pass these things, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits. Really? From who?
Yeah, well, people are running out of money for lawsuits. Well, people are running out of money for lawsuits. These things cost millions of dollars, Kevin. You know, you've been involved with many of these.
I have been writing the checks from the money that our supporters have been sending us, which we are, you know, duty-bound to spend wisely. But any of these things that are brought to court now would have to be brought to court only in Marion County, because that's been baked into the law, where we're guaranteed to lose. The appeal would have to go to the appeals court, which already okayed all of these elements, except for the gun store restrictions, which they most certainly would okay. And then you would lose at every level. And so it's very easy for legislators to say, oh, great, there's going to be lawsuits, because as you will recall, you know, they said, well, we're going to provide $25,000 for a lawsuit. Here we're standing on the Capitol steps.
With the fake paper check. I remember that right. Our issue in play, Kevin. Kevin Starrett with me once again, the Oregon Firearms Federation. The issue is to sit there and be present as this stuff goes through under the guise of, well, we'll just fight it in the courts. If you're representing your people, you are protecting your people from the intrusion. And there doesn't seem to be will at this point to protect their constituents from these intrusions on their rights. Am I right or wrong about it?
Well, you're absolutely right. And Bill, unfortunately, I pay a lot of attention to the news, which sometimes is not the healthiest thing to do. But they're attacking farmers. They're attacking truckers. They're attacking landlords. They've already attacked your parental rights. They're promoting porn in schools, which Republicans vote for. You know, Senator Dick Anderson voted to protect porn in schools.
And that's the one with the, you can't really challenge the books, right? The porno books.
You can't take out any pornography from your children's school. But there's nothing, they're doing nothing to stand in the way of this, because, you see, we're polite. You know, this is not how we do things. And if you look at the history of the left, when they're in the minority, they'll disrupt anything they have to disrupt to get their way. Then when they get into the majority, they will then crush the minority. And in the case of, you know, the people who theoretically represent us, they're just saying, well, there's nothing we can do except send out, you know, strongly worded press releases or fundraisers, you know, like Bozarth Davis's endless fundraisers to send money to her truckers PAC so we can fight this. Well, you're in the legislature. What do you need money for to fight this? It's all a scam. They're all hucksters. It's absolutely unbelievable what they get away with. But the fact is that it is their job. Now their rap is, well, it's the voters' fault, right? Because you have to flood the other side with emails. Well, when you look at bills like I guess it was the recent bill that Manning had in to end militias, right? Mm-hmm. To go and look, I think that was 947. If you go and look at 100% of the testimony on that bill was opposed to it. It's all uploaded. You can go look at it. I've never seen that before. 100% against. Sails through, right? So don't tell me that our people aren't showing up. Our people are showing up. And then the other thing is, they'll schedule bills for hearing.
gun owners will show up in the Capitol after traveling sometimes for hours. Then at the very last minute, these bills are pulled off the schedule. But guess who wasn't in the building that day? The mommies, the red shirts, the anti-gun people, because they already knew the bills were being pulled off the schedule. So they jerk around the gun owners, and the Republicans put up with this. I mean, it was like when a comment was directed at Mike McClain from someone during a hearing. He starts to respond, and Przanski basically tells him, shut up. And he goes, well, wait a minute. That comment was directed at me. And Przanski says, just take it. And okay, Przanski's a jerk and a rude guy, but have a little dignity and say, we're not putting up with this crap anymore. This is not the way, when the Republicans talk to the Democrats who are screwing everybody, they're always very polite. It's a lot of decorum. But the Democrats treat the Republicans like doormats, and the Republicans keep showing up. And they keep, and, you know, the other thing is that they're not using any of the tools. Most of the time when bills are being heard, the Republicans don't even make any attempt to slow it down. And they can slow it down by simply requiring the constitutional requirement that bills be read in their entirety.
And by the way, not reading the bills by machine, not letting them do the machine thing, right?
You know, I don't know if there's a rule that affects machine reading, but the fact is they're not even doing that. Every time there's a bill, a Republican gets up, usually it's Virgil Osborne or Dan Bonham getting up and saying, we want to suspend the rules because, by God, we want to move your agenda ahead. And some of the agenda is just absurd. I mean,
well, see, the bottom line we have here is that everyone says, well, you know, you need to get in touch with the Democrats. Well, the Democrats want this. Democrats don't care what we think. The point is, our people need to fight. They need to fight. They need to dump the decorum, well, I want every Democrat to be my friends. They're not our friends in the state legislature when it comes to the Second Amendment. They are not our friends and cannot be our friends. Forget about it.
The Democrats want to castrate your male children and remove the breasts from your female children, okay? The Democrats want to jack up the cost of everything. The Democrats want you as a homeowner to be responsible for whether or not your contractor pays his bills. They're psychopaths. There's not going to be any reasoning with these people. But the reality is that under the system we live, under the system on which we live, we have representatives, okay? So we've got ballot measures. That's mob rule. That's democracy. That's a bad thing. But theoretically, we hire representatives to represent our best interests. So we hired people like Drazen and Bonham and Anderson and Brock Smith. And it is their job then to go represent us, because everybody cannot drive to Salem every day to testify on bills that are pulled at the last minute, so your time is wasted. So those are that's the reason we hire those people. And yet you get people like Drazen on a recent radio show saying, well, the problem is they didn't elect me governor and they're not providing enough emails to the Democrats. Well, clearly that does nothing. It's your job. Of course, the thing is with someone like Drazen has a long history of voting with the left. She protects the militant leftists all the time. She attacks the police. She attacks conservatives. And yet she became the House leader again.
So we have problems with the Democrats, but the Democrats are a known quantity. Our problem are with our own people. That's our challenge.
Absolutely the problem. And of course, the Republican Party, which is constantly in chaos, doesn't exert any control over the legislators. It is a small group of people in the caucus who pick who the candidates are going to be. And the party sits back and does nothing. And so the party needs to be cleaned up. It needs to adjust its policy so that it can influence legislators and hold them accountable. You know, when someone like Anderson votes for porn in schools, the party should be doing something about that. Remember, when Herman Bartschiger decided to endorse Betsy Johnson, now, I didn't agree with that, but it certainly was a rational position, and he and I discussed that. I mean, it was not an irrational position to take under the circumstances.
Yeah, but he paid a price for that.
Well, he got, quote, censured by the party. But when Hansel and Finley wrote a bill to make criminals out of Herman and Dallas Hurd, because they were both senators, Dallas Hurd and Dennis Lithicum, because they were both senators and officers of the party. These are two Republican senators who tried to make criminals out of their party leaders. They didn't get censured. When Anderson voted for porn. He didn't get censured. When Charlie Conrad voted to castrate your children, he didn't get censured. Who got censured? Herman, who was the most courageous person in that legislature, who led the walkout that Drazen followed, he gets, quote, censured. And Mike Nierman, who people may have forgotten, but the most conservative House rep who actually stood up to the Antifa mobs and everything and opened the doors to the building to the people who owned it, who led the charge to get rid of her. Him, I'm sorry, who led the charge to get rid of Mike Nierman? Well, Christine Drazen. And who voted for that? Every Republican House rep. So if you're a stand-up person who actually does something in the face of this insanity, your Republican colleagues will immediately throw you under the bus. And it's absolutely, look, you know, who used to work for Mike Nierman? A staffer, Anna Scharf. Anna Scharf is now a House rep. When Mike Nierman was thrown out by his own people, the county commissioners had to pick his replacement. Who was in the running for his replacement? Well, Anna Scharf. Well, when asked, if you had been in the legislature, would you have thrown out Mike Nierman? She was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Why?
So, well, because that's what she thought they wanted to hear, and she wanted the job. And so it is the Republicans who are destroying themselves through cowardice, through greed. The party's an amorphous blob, and the caucus promotes itself and will continue to promote itself. Now, my hope is that continued pressure will embarrass these people into no longer being part of this circus, because if they're saying, well, we've got to be there, there's no reason for them to be there. They can accomplish nothing. They can't pass anything. They can't stop anything. The only purpose they serve is to be doormats for the Democrats so they have the quorum they need to pass these attacks on the people.
Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation, OregonFirearms.org. Kind of tough medicine, but I think you're telling truth on this one, Kevin. I appreciate you being on. And by the way, OregonFirearms.org. If it passes, it's because our own people will not walk out and protect us. That's our bottom line. Kevin, we'll have you back. Be well. Sorry it's not a happy, fun ball kind of way of wrapping this up, but you know, we're in this legislature session. This is stuff as serious as a heart attack, and everyone's just acting, oh, we'll just go and sue after the fact. Good luck, okay?
Thank you, Bill.
All right. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.
2x4.